represent for a lot of years and what they have created and what is going on with the virtual school is just unbelievable. In the short period of time that it's been open for 2.5 years and getting more and more schools engaged in it and talks with other states within the consortium about being a part of the Virtual Learning Academy Charter School. It certainly looks like that's going to happen. But without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Kozakowski, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Virtual Learning Academy, and he will introduce the people that are going to present with them. We have about 75 minutes, and I think the presenters would like to have you ask questions as you go along. Don't hold them until the end. Ask questions on anything that you may have. Steve?
Thank you, Skip. Skip fails to say he's my former superintendent. I was his assistant, and as he likes to say, his bodyguard. he's the reason that this school is here today. He was the one with the vision to say, let's go forward and start a virtual school. And this happened a couple years before he retired, so he always leaves that little piece out. With me, Gary Tyrone, who's our Chief Learning Officer, which people say, what does that mean? A lot like a principal, a lot different than a principal, but some similarities. And Tony Baldessaro, who's a new administrator with us and is also, at this point, overseeing our Personalized Pathways program, which is more. So welcome, everybody, and thanks for coming. A few things before I get started. What states are represented here? How about New Hampshire? Okay, and Maine? Also, before I get started, what questions do you have, if any? But what are the questions? I want to make sure that during our presentation we meet your needs. So what kind of questions do you have about online learning, about how we personalize learning, anything like that at this point?
Steve?
Yes.
How do you increase your success rate and your retention rate for those kids who sign up for virtual learning? We've tried it, had very limited success with kids completing the program once they start signed up for it.
Okay. And what type of program? School-based or something else?
School-based. And okay. You know, a course that we don't offer, kids sign up for to take. And had very limited success.
And who
We've
did
been
they
trying
sign up?
It for, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
And who, you don't have to give me the vendor name, but was it a commercial entity or?
No, I don't think it was.
Okay, but was there anything you did inside, in-house?
No.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, and feel free to ask questions as we go along. First, a little bit about our school. We're located, our physical office is in Exeter, New Hampshire. But our students right now are in New Hampshire primarily, although we do have a few kids from New York State, Massachusetts, and we're looking to expand to other states. As Skip has said, we're working with people in the consortium to try to bring this to everyone because we feel our program's pretty special, and hopefully by the end of the presentation you might agree. When you look at virtual learning across the United States, it's interesting that there isn't much in the Northeast. We're really the first public school in New England or in the Northeast, and a lot of the schools that have been operating have been out there for a number of years. Perhaps the biggest and most successful is Florida Virtual School. They have about 175,000 enrollments at this point. And when we talk about enrollments, that's a semester. We call it a segment, but it's a semester. So the student we're taking a full year algebra course would count as 2 enrollments. So they're about 175,000 now, which is obviously quite large. And they serve not only Florida, but anyone here can purchase a course from them if you'd like to, as far as taking. A lot of these states that have virtual schools are statewide schools. There are also a lot of other schools that aren't represented that may be in the white areas that are smaller regional schools. Matter of fact, I had a call from a superintendent or an assistant superintendent in Texas, and they want to start a virtual school. And just so you'll know, I said, well, how big is your district? He said, oh, 150,000 kids. So it's like starting a school for the whole state. So there may be those types of schools that are out there, but this represents the number of statewide virtual schools. We are a charter school, but we're also a nonprofit. You really have to look at us as a public school because we're approved by our State Board of Education. Not only can we award credit, but we will graduate students. We'll have a first graduating class this year, but most of our kids are part-time. We do have a small percentage who are full-time with us. The difference between us and a typical public school is that after being approved by the State Board of Education, we have an annual accountability report. We have our goals that we mapped out in our charter, and if we don't meet those goals, we can be shut down at any time. And also, we have a five-year charter renewal, and at that point, we'll get an intense kind of accreditation-type visit from a team that the state puts together, and they'll look at everything that's going on in our school and decide whether or not to renew our charter. And obviously, if they don't, we cease to exist. So we have a different level of accountability than a lot of schools. At this point, all of our courses are free to New Hampshire students. The money does not come from a local district. It comes from the same source of money that the state uses to send to local districts. And what we're hoping to work out with other states would either be that from the state level, they might secure our services and offer a certain number of seats to that state, but we don't know how that will look going forward or if it's going to be successful, but we're hoping. But the big difference is parent and student choice. A local school district can't demand that a student take a course with us, but they can ask the parent, would it be okay if Steve took Algebra 1 through the Virtual Learning Academy? The parent signs off, the student says, yeah, I think this is a good thing, then I can go forward. But it is about parent and student choice. We've seen tremendous growth in our school, and this bottom bluish line here represents the year that we opened. We started enrollments here. We opened in January of 2008 with about 700 enrollments, and since that time, you can see we've grown quite a bit, and as of today, I checked our numbers last night, we're between 7,700 and 7,800 enrollments at this point. So you can see we've grown about 10 times in a very short amount of time. Students, a lot of times people say, who are your students? It must be stereotypical type of student, and it really isn't. Really, kids across the board. When we first opened, we were designing the school, a principal came to me and said, I know who the kids are that you're going to attract. They're going to be male, and they're probably going to be computer geeks. Because at that time, that was his experience with online classes, but it really hasn't been that. We have 4% of our kids are dropouts, and in New Hampshire, you have to be older than 18 in order to drop out. So these might be 19-year-olds who have no affiliation anywhere and are saying, you know, I think I'll try a course, maybe a course or two, and maybe work toward my diploma. So I should explain the difference between the blue and the green. Green are enrollments. The blue are individual students. And the reason there's a difference is you might have, say, five students, but if they're all taking two or three courses, they are actually more of a percentage of our enrollments. It's a difference. About two-thirds of our enrollments come from traditional public schools. And then we have 6% from private schools, 17% are homeschooled, other charter schools, 2%, and then our own full-time folks make up about 5% of the population. We have right now just over 50 full-time students, and we have applications that should bring us over 100 fairly soon. But we always look at our largest, by far, percentage as being part-time students. Our model is, in a lot of cases, very different than other virtual schools. Some virtual schools basically automate what's already happening in schools. And by that I mean that they have classes that begin the same day that your classes begin, and the same day that traditional school classes begin, follow a strict timeline. So you're taking this class from 10 to 11 every day, so on and so forth. Our model is quite different, and that's what we really believe, that we separate ourselves from a lot. We have rolling enrollment, which means a student can sign for a class at any time of the day or any day of the year and start within a week or so of that enrollment. So if a student today decides they want Algebra 1, sign up for tonight, have the parents sign off, and it's okay. And within a week, they'll be starting that class. Classes are still full classes. The algebra course takes 32 to 36 weeks, but yet at the same time, the student can decide the pace. And so what can happen is a student might say, I love math. Math is my favorite subject. I'm taking algebra as a seventh grader because I really want to take calculus early in high school. And I'd like to get high school credit for it, so I just love math. Can I take this course in 2 months? Well, if they really wanted to put the hours in, they could do that. Another student might come to us and say, math is such a hard thing for me. I just struggle and struggle. And I've already failed it once. I went through a full year. They're telling me I have to take it again. Can you help me? And the answer is yes. They could decide to take it on an extended pace. And maybe they need 40 or 42 weeks, but they can do that. In our school, there's never a time when we say that everybody will finish Unit 3 by this Friday. It's the student's pace. However, we do hold them accountable. They have to continue to work. A student can't say, I think I'll do a unit today and I'll see you in June when I want to do Chapter 2. That's not an option. They have to tell the teacher, what is your pace? It can always be changed, but they have to work continuously. So obviously for that student that's struggling, they may say, I need more time to pull this together and understand it. Somebody else can say, I just want to go. And never help that. Yes?
So the accountability piece, how do you hold them accountable?
We can basically track everything the student does within our system. So they have assignments, a certain number of assignments they should be completing every week. There's communication with the instructor every week. And that's how they're held accountable. So if a student doesn't do any work this week, they're going to get a call from the instructor. The instructor's probably going to talk to the parent. And they're going to say, hey, gee, Steve hasn't done any work. What's going on? 2 weeks happens, they get a letter. You're in danger of being dropped from this course. 3 weeks, we put them in what's called contact instructor. They got to log in. It says, see your instructor. You can't get in. And then we have a serious discussion about. And what we'll say to a kid is not, you failed, you're gone. We'll say, maybe you're not ready for this course. Why don't you take some time off, take you out of the course, you come back when you're ready to be serious about this. And many times, that's enough. And the kid will say, I really need this. And they understand that you're serious and that you're going to have to do the work. And they do. Other kids, as you would guess, we have across the spectrum, they don't get it. They drop out and out of our course. Maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. Also, any place. So a student can work from home. Again, you saw 2/3 of our kids are in traditional schools. Some schools allow time during the school day. They have labs set up with maybe someone supervising it before or after school. Our kids can work from home. It doesn't matter where they are, as long as they have an internet connection. We have kids who are involved in sports, who are all over the world, who are continuing to take courses with us. And anytime. Of course, we have some students who are working. We have some students who are just some of your best students who want to take everything that's available to them, sometimes run out of time. And they'll say, this is great. I really can take that Chinese course I couldn't take at my local school because I'm involved with student council and football and field hockey. They can fit it in during another time. And we also can meet the needs of, we even have elementary school students taking middle school classes, elementary school students taking high school classes, middle school students taking high school classes. And we have high school class students taking college classes. We really try to fit their needs. Our mission is really, the central core of our mission is really about personalization. And we never feel that we're in competition with a traditional school. And I think we've been successful there with that high number of students in traditional schools. We feel we supplement, we think we have different strengths than a traditional school. We can't go up and give a kid a hug. We can make them feel good through video and audio and other things, but we can't do that. We obviously can't give a hug. However, the flexibility is fairly easy for us. It's not always so easy in an industrial model school. We have to deal with the realities. I'm a former assistant superintendent, former classroom teacher. I know schools run on bell schedules. Buses make a big difference. Skip and I have been in hundreds of meetings where the only discussion is about trying to change the bus schedule by 2 minutes because you have 7 different school districts, and if the bus is off by 2 minutes here, it creates a problem for the school at the end. And so everything gets driven by that. In the online world, we don't have to be driven by that. So we have flexibility that you can't have. But to me, the beauty is to bring the two together, not to say one is better than the other, is to bring the strengths together for the benefit of kids. I'm sure you've all heard, when you talk about real estate, that it's all about location, location, location. And we believe in the virtual world, at least at our school, that it's really about relationships. And we work very hard at relationships. And sometimes that's the first question that people have. It must be very dry. It must be, kids must not get to know people. Well, it's very different. Almost every one of our instructors, we have about 150 right now, have told us they have deeper relationships with kids than they do in their physical school. they say because I'm traditionally working with 25 to 30 students in a 50-minute period, or maybe you're in block scheduling, you have more time, but I'm working with a lot of kids at once. However, when I'm online, I'm either working with groups of two or three, or I'm doing a lot of one-on-one kids, so I really get to know them. Plus, we require that instructors contact parents by phone every month. They have to issue a progress report every month. And because of doing those things, we have a lot of teachers who will say, I feel like they're part of the family. When I call up, I recognize the parent's voice. We chit-chat about things other than your kid's in trouble. We can talk about, hey, did you see the Red Sox game last night or whatever? Hey, how is Steve doing? Oh, seems to be going well. Can I speak with Steve? And it really gets to be a different type of communication relationship than you have in a traditional school. So we really work hard at trying to establish relationships. And I think going back to the question about how do you get kids motivated in this environment, that makes all the difference. When we've had instructors who sometimes don't get it, and who we've had to separate ways with, it's usually around communication. And if they communicate with the kids, if they communicate on an ongoing basis with parents, kids are usually successful. You know that yourself in any traditional school, but it's especially true online. Question?
A question. I'm wondering how many students a typical instructor might have online.
A new instructor might have, we start with 3 to 5. They might have typically 30 to 50 once if they're part-time. We're starting with full-time instructors next year for the first time. We're kind of working that way. And they will have, over the course of the year, 250 enrollments, which, remember, divide by two. So it's 125 kids, which is almost identical to a typical school. That's over a year. But a class, some people ask us, you have to kind of change your thinking from classroom. There is no classroom. So a student, a teacher could be teaching freshman level English and have 125 students in there. But it's over the course of a year, you know, there's no bells ringing and so forth. And you're going to be dealing with the kids at different times of the day. So it's quite different. You probably saw the first slide that said personalized learning pathways. And we don't, because we're so flexible, we don't have to really slot kids into any one program and say you can't jump from one to another. For example, we have advanced placement courses. We don't have any minimum requirements for entering other than the prerequisites. Obviously, you're not going to take calculus unless you've had the prerequisite math courses. But we don't have a prerequisite GPA. We don't require that they have recommendations from instructors. And sometimes it doesn't work out. We'll have kids who come in and just can't handle it and they drop out, and that's okay. But we have other kids who it's just a question of the fact that they want to work and they want credit and they want to earn it, and they're allowed to do that. So we don't put kids into slots that say you can't go one way or the other. And I guess if we were trying to come up with a metaphor for our programs is that they point in every direction, whether you want to be part of our personalized pathways, which Tony will speak about, and work with extended learning opportunities and internships, or whether you want to take a traditional course, whether you want to take it short-term or long-term, all those things are possible. And I think, again, I'm trying to emphasize this point, we aren't constrained by place or by time. Next thing I want to show you is a little film clip from Catholic University that you may have seen. It's their commercials that they've had out for about 2 years. And when you think of it, as you go through this, if you substitute the term university or college for online learning, I think you'll get the meaning. I also will tell you up front, there's a couple of statements in here I disagree with. I think they're a little heavy-handed and kind of downplaying the traditional model. But I think this really gets the idea across.
Where is it written that the old way is the right way? Where is it written that a traditional education is the only way to get an education? Where is it written that classes only take place in a classroom? What if you could get your degree to develop your talent, no matter who you are or where you are? What if there was a different kind of university? One that's changing the rules, that comes to you, that fits in your life, even adapts to how you learn. Where is it written that you can't change? that's just the thing. It isn't written anywhere.
Jumping to the next slide, I mean, hopefully I think we can move to a day when all of our programs, traditional schools, with help of online schools, can be very flexible. This young man worked so that he could leave high school basically a semester early because he wanted to spend the semester in Washington working for a senator. And when I see stuff like that, and kids have to jump through all kinds of hoops to be the special one who can do that, it shouldn't be that way. It should be to any kid who's motivated. Even if they're early in their senior year or late in their junior year, they should be able to take that chance to learn in a different way. And through our personalized learning pathways, as a matter of fact, this student could have remained a student at their high school, participated in their traditional graduation, and gotten academic credit through us. I mean, I think those are things that we really need to be able to do for our kids going forward. So what I'd like to do now is just talk a little bit about the programs we have in place, and then have Tony talk about personalized pathways. Everything in green are things that are in place in our school now. Two areas that are blue, that will be starting next year. And the areas that are in white will be starting in the near future, but we haven't really planned on a date yet. So we start on the left. We have, obviously, K-12. You can see at K-5, we have the option for accelerated students to take some of our courses. We are studying the K-5 curriculum. At this point, I don't believe it's matured enough to really offer from a public virtual school standpoint. There are many who do, but typically what they do is they'll assign a certified teacher, but they heavily depend upon the parent to do a lot of the teaching. As a matter of fact, there have been a couple of court cases where states have lost because they've said, you have a law that says certified teacher, but you're asking the parent to serve as the teacher, and it's not right. And I would have to agree. And so anyway, at this point, until we can really pull out some of these things, what we see is a way we can support schools is, for example, at the elementary level, maybe offer science supplementary courses because we know that's an area that there's going to be a lot of new expectations for elementary schools. At the same time, a lot of our elementary school staff don't have a lot of science background, so this would be a way that we could help. Most of the curriculum now is just monolithic, and you either do the whole thing or you don't do the part. So area that we may look at in the future. Grades 6-8, we don't offer full-time options there. However, homeschool students could opt to take all of their coursework through us. There's enough coursework for a full-time program. We just don't offer full-time there. Grades 9-12, we do offer the full-time option, as well as the part-time option. The full-time option, one of the biggest differences is that they become part of an advisory. Much like any advisory you might have in your schools, they stay with the same instructor for 4 years. They have activities that they participate in as a group and individually. They talk and they work on career development, and by their senior year, they'll be developing a portfolio. They'll be involved in service learning in their communities, as well as participate in ELO, internship, those types of things. We also have dual credit available, and by that I mean they get high school as well as college credit. Our community college system right now offers what we call ESTAR courses, and in those courses, the student be taught by a community college professor. They are, however, on the community college calendar, so they have to start when the college starts and complete the course. What we'll be rolling out in the fall is a partnership with the Southern New Hampshire University, where students will be able to work on a plan that's more similar to our model. Students will have a complete year to finish a one semester college credit course, so they can start in September, but they don't have to follow the college calendar. They might say, well, I want to finish that college course, but can I have till March? And the answer is yes. They'll also be taught by our instructors, who will be certified as adjunct instructors through Southern New Hampshire University. And so what will happen is for $75, I'll pay the university, they'll get high school credit in that area plus the college credit. Our hope someday is to have enough of these courses so that Southern New Hampshire University or someone else will award a associate's degree to students who are motivated enough to do that during their high school career. For the majority of students, they'll take enough to maybe finish either part of an associate's degree, maybe a year, but again, it's all about that flexibility, or maybe just one course, but that'll be up to the student. Gary, did you want to step in with the next one? Can we just go back one slide?
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to point out, we started up in January of 2008, and when you look at this right here, we had this box, obviously, to start, K through 12, offering grades, 9 through 12 offerings, on a part-time basis, and we had traditional courses, and that was essentially it. So over a two-year period, we've really grown all these other pieces right here. And as we start talking about the VLACS model, it really are things that are brought to us by other schools as well. When you talk about flexibility, when you talk about relationships, there's a lot of reciprocity. We're allowing for more flexibility for physical schools as well, and I'll share some of those things over the course of this presentation. And we are also allowing for the relationship piece. One thing I wanted to mention, I just want to come back to your original question in terms of motivation, is we have 150 teachers, as Steve mentioned. We have very little turnover. And the reason for that, at least I think, but I mean if you asked any of our teachers as well, is because of the quality of the relationship, the difference that they feel that they have with parents, with students, and with other teachers as well. And we'll get into a few stories on that. The other side of it is that I was an assistant superintendent of the district before I came on board here. And the director of guidance came back with some information that Skip and Steve had presented, basically that there would be an online school possibly evolving and developing that our kids would have access to. And I didn't put too much credence in it at the time from my position, simply because we also had distance opportunities. We had a satellite dish on top of the school. We had a number of kids taking courses in the AP area, especially. And we only had about a 50% completion rate, simply because the kids couldn't access the teacher in a real-time manner. It was done through email, and there was just very little connectivity for the student and the teacher. So we had about a 50% ratio. That was my experience. I just didn't think it would play out well based on what I knew. And because of that, this has been a revelation, because we have about an 80% completion rate right now with our students. And it is because of relationship. It is because of the flexibility. And it is also increasingly because of the support we're getting through schools as well. I'm just going to throw out all these right here. This is really, I'm speaking now more through a student perspective. As you start looking at some of these needs that are being met through our courses, probably course recovery is the biggest slice of the pie if you're going to rate these. The acceleration pieces, though, are not from students who are looking to get through high school faster. They're more from students who are looking to make better use of their time in high school. And the example I can give that may be best illuminates what I'm saying is a student from Manchester who was in the eighth grade in March was getting through Algebra 1, wanted to start taking geometry in the spring of his eighth grade year, take it through the summer so that student could start Algebra 2 in grade 9 and have more access to higher level courses when he went to Manchester Central High School. That tends to be the student. We have a lot of middle school students who will get the jump on Spanish 1, Latin 1, Chinese 1, so that they can start the second level of that course and maybe take a second language as part of their high school experience. The course recovery piece has been terrific. Tony will talk a little bit about competencies here in a minute, and that just even adds more to the recovery piece, and that, you know, just part of a course can be taken. But we have a lot of schools now who are starting to view summer school a little bit differently, or restarts a little bit differently. When you get to November, for instance, if you find out a student is misplaced in a course, or for some reason can't work at the pace that he's being asked to work at, it allows them to restart the student in an online course and work at the pace they want, or move them to a completely different course, maybe in Algebra 1 to Algebra 1A. Even if you physically move them to Algebra 1A in school, they're still going to have a more difficult time fitting in, catching up, and getting on the same page with this class. Homebound students, we have a number of students who, and some of our best students, by the way, who are home having children or have just had a child. We have some teachers who have gotten a grant written by the, they wrote the grant that was funded through the National Council of Teachers of English as combining a health and an English course for young moms, and that's just kind of in the pilot stage right now. One of the better things, and again, this is an idea from schools, especially this time of year, we tend to have more students who are having to go because of some substance issue to a rehab situation, and they can be there anywhere from 1 week to 3 weeks, and then they're put right back into their peer group, and that tends to not have a high success rate for a student. We're finding more schools now are just having the student finish the course online and then reconnect with their peers the next fall. Steve mentioned travel and sports. We do have quite a few students from a nationally ranked fencer who travels through the world, whose school works with him so that he can take some courses physically at the school, depending on his schedule and how those courses might work, and some courses online. We have a snowboarder who travels throughout the world as well. Homeschool students, again, makes up about 17% of our population, and that tends to be a pretty good opportunity for parents to be able to develop a plan where chemistry can be actually taught by a highly qualified, certified teacher. And then the work situation, I'll mention one piece now. I'm going to talk a little bit about impact to schools here in a second. But we have a school, Interlakes Regional High School up in the Lakes region of New Hampshire, who was identifying at-risk students, wanted to develop a situation that gave them more flexibility to keep them in school, discovered that those students, in terms of the online experience, didn't have very good access to computers at home. So they opened up their lab. They actually expanded their school day to go from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock and allowed these students to do some online work at school, have access to computers. But that actually solved another issue they were having with tardy students not getting credit, who they could now make flexible their school day. They could create school schedules that ran from 10 to 5 or, you know, anything within that time frame. And it also allowed for them to develop now their internship program so that they could actually have students work during the school day without sacrificing what they needed to take at school in terms of the schedule. So I'm not going to turn this slide over to Tony anymore.
Yep. So one of the new things that we're able to do to personalize programming for kids is something called competency recovery and extended learning opportunities. And both of these came as a result of some changes here in New Hampshire. At the law was passed that said at the end of the 08-09 school year that all high schools in New Hampshire would be competency-based, moving away from the traditional seat time model. And frankly, that's a difficult transition for schools to make. Culturally, it's a big change. Internally, it's a big change. Instructionally, it's a big change. One of the pieces to that is, one of the challenges to that has been, how do you, what happens when a student misses a competency? How do you manage that at that point? So if you're in the middle of October and the student misses a competency early in the school year, how do you help that student make up that competency or meet their competency in a different way, knowing that the student in the school is still running in full operation?
So one of the, what many schools are deciding to do is to run that competency during the summertime. And the student will then come back and have summer school for a week or whatever it might be to make up that competency. And that's, I think we all understand why that happens, but there's a couple of problems with that. Number one, the learning isn't relevant to the student anymore at that point. This was learning that was taking place in October. And number two, I think it could be an assumption that the learning that took place from November to June could have built upon that learning that was missed in September and October. And if the student didn't understand the competency early in the year, how could that impact learning later in the year? And so we kind of look at that as an opportunity for us to continue to partner and help schools. So we developed our competencies for our courses. Now, one of the things that New Hampshire did was they said, okay, go ahead and develop competencies, but we're not really going to tell you how to do it. We're not going to state competencies. Each school is going to develop their own competencies. And so there are as many competencies as there are high schools here in the state, which is okay for the local school and good for local control, but from our perspective, it posed something of a problem because we had to figure out how we were going to develop our competencies, knowing that we serve many, all schools across the state, all students. Well, in the end, we decided we just needed to develop our competencies and work with schools to help them match. And so one of the things that we did, when we developed our competencies, we said, first of all, we needed to make sure they were accessible to everybody. So as our teachers, we had, 24 of our teachers come in. We developed competencies for 31 of our courses so far. What we decided was we needed to make them accessible to everybody. So we knew the one common piece was the state standards, so they are aligned to the state GSEs, but we also wanted to make them searchable for folks. And so what we did was we asked our teachers to create these competencies, but also to make them searchable so that we can create an online database. And so what you have up here is our database of competencies and for all of our courses. So these are all the courses which we have competencies developed for. And we'll just keep it on Algebra 1 for now. And if I hit search, down below drops the first of, if you look up in the corner here, you can see it's showing page 1 of 8. That means that we have 8 competencies in our algebra course. So we break our year-long algebra course into 8 different competencies. This one here happens to be the first of our competencies. So if a student misses that competency, let's say in September or October, instead of waiting until the end of the year or summertime to try to beat that competency at a time that maybe isn't relevant at all for the student, they can enroll in our competency courses and be taking that and be meeting that competency immediately and have that learning taking place as it's happened. A couple of other ways that competencies can work for schools that aren't necessarily competency-based or isn't a competency-related issue. Some schools, and as Gary said, a lot of these ideas come from our partner schools, but some schools have come up and said, we have students who transfer into our school mid-quarter or midterm, and they're coming from a schedule that is unlike our schedule. Maybe it's a 4-block or maybe a modified block, whatever it might be. And we know that they don't fit conveniently right into our course. And so what they've asked is, could we have them take a competency or two that will get them to where they'd be a better fit for our course, say, second semester? And that is a very reasonable request, and that's something that makes a lot of sense. It's a way to really customize and personalize that transition for the student. The other thing that we've heard is schools have said, well, we have students who at the end of the year have that 58%. And we know that even though we're not competency-based, that they really struggled in this part of
the course? Could they just log on and take a short competency with you, and then, you know, we could use that as a way to translate into a passing grade for them? And our answer to that is of course you can. Each of these competencies, we think will probably take a student maybe 3 to 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks to complete. We haven't had enough students enrolled in these to get really good data, but we think that's probably the time frame we're looking at. So it's a way for a student to move into a course for a short period of time to fit a very specific need and then move back into the regular course as they continue to move. The other thing that competencies allowed for us to do is to offer, let me get back to the slide here, is to offer extended learning opportunities. The state of New Hampshire, again, said that local schools need to come up with some sort of policy relative to extended learning opportunities. Extended learning opportunities are, as defined by the state of New Hampshire, earning credit for those things that would happen outside of a traditional classroom. So an internship, a travel, some sort of a work study, an independent study, something that is unique in that it's not happening inside of a regular classroom. And I think schools have offered these to some extent, a little bit here and there. We always recognize that learning can take place outside of a classroom, and so I think many schools have been trying to figure out a way to make this work. And when one student walks into the guidance counselor's office and says, "I'm going to France next year, is there any way I can earn French credit?" That guidance counselor can probably work with that individual student and make it happen. But the problem occurs is when 10, 12, 15, 20, 30 students walk into the guidance counselor and say, "I want to do an extended learning opportunity," because now it becomes a real personnel issue, it becomes a management issue for that local school on a number of levels. Number one, you need an HQT for each of those ELOs. In most schools, and frankly, most contracts aren't designed to manage these types of personalized programs. But the other thing is that very rarely does an experiential piece fit perfectly with the course that is offered at the school or the competencies that make up that course. And until the competencies were in place, we really had no way to backfill, if you will, the gaps that may exist in an experiential piece. And so what we're able to do now is students can apply for extended learning opportunity through us. We can take a look at what their experience is going to be, what the experience will be with the student. And we'll be able to identify gaps in the learning and where areas where the experience piece just isn't going to fit. And we're going to be able to backfill those with the online competencies that we have in place. So an example I like to give is if a student wanted to do an internship at the Squam Lake Science Center up in Holderness, New Hampshire, and they wanted to work with the animals and do all the things that, you know, care for the animals and learn about animals. And they said, "You know, I want to earn biology credit through this internship." Seems very, that's a reasonable request. It makes a lot of sense. The problem, though, is there's not a lot of botany there. The student's going to be working with animals, but there's not a lot of plant science there. So how do you meet the plant science side of the biology credit? Well, the student could apply for an ELO through us. The experiential piece will take care of the animal side. The online piece could take care of the botany side, and through that blended approach over the course of the experience, the student can earn their biology credit in an alternative way, and hopefully in a way that makes the most sense for that student and helps that student really explore or be involved with that which they might be passionate about. Yes?
So who decides which competencies need to be met by the ELO program, and which competencies are met through you?
Right.
Is it the highly qualified teacher that says, "Okay, I'm going to look at your competencies and see, okay, we need these extra ones"?
Actually, part of our application procedures, we ask the student to actually go through the competencies and say which ones they're going to meet experientially and which ones they are not. Those that they are going to meet experientially, they're going to have to develop artifacts and talk about how they're going to be able to show that they've met those. However, that's the role of the HQT, is really to oversee that and make sure that that's really something that could be done through the experience. But so to answer your question, we look for the student to develop that very early in the process, and then we kind of mold and help that student to, fine-tune it, if you will. If the student applies for the extended learning opportunity through us, yes, we do. Now, some schools have good ELO programs in place. They may have an ELO coordinator. And to those schools, we're saying, use our competencies to backfill those gaps that may be in place, but everything else is managed there. But if a student were to apply for us, we would supply the HQT and do all the other pieces. Yeah. Any other questions about ELOs or competencies?
In terms of some of the bullets on this particular slide, Steve highlighted them, highlighted a few of them in terms of the student-centered approach. All of our students are contacted by a teacher through a welcome call. That welcome call includes a parent. They gather information in terms of learning style, interests, schedule, and all of those types of things. There's a 28-day grace period. And at that point, a pace is probably more appropriately determined between a student and a teacher. So there's also a follow-up monthly call and monthly progress reports that go out. And the student is always at the center of how the course is approached. I like to say that out of every educational situation I've ever been in my career, this is probably the most constructive type of, if you're looking at that at a philosophical approach, this is probably the most constructive or co-constructive environment that I've been in. As far as the personalization, if you have a chance to go to our website, there's a little bit of a film clip there with a student and her mom. The student's name is Vicky. She went to Nashua Middle School. Went into the high school, was completely overwhelmed, so the mom pulled her out of the school to homeschool her. Found that she really wasn't geared to helping her out as much as she needed. So she took courses with us for a little bit over a year and ultimately went back to Nashua and graduated with her class. And what we found out, this is one of those examples of a school and a situation informing us, is that there's a whole block, and you can always look at them in your own schools, of students who are transitioning, whether it be from elementary school to middle school to high school, who are overwhelmed, who just can't handle that change in environment and taking five or six courses at once. Their lockers are exploding. So we have a number of schools now who are chunking things for their students. What they're saying is, why don't you take these three or four courses with us, start the school year, focusing on those courses, and you're going to take the other two courses online. They'll work with a parent in this regard. So a student then could start, once they're settled into their school courses, they can start the online experience in October or November and more or less establish a pace that is conducive to their understanding. The communication piece is really the difference maker right now in terms of that experience I related with the other school and what we have now. We have so many tools that allow a teacher and student to communicate that it's incredible. I know how many people here have used Skype. We have Limpa Classroom Pronto, which allows visual audio communication with a student. It allows face-to-face, obviously, in that sense. It allows for desktop sharing. So it's like sitting right next to the teacher. A student can share whatever's on their desktop and give control over to the teacher, as well as the other way around. We have a classroom opportunity where a teacher can invite a large groups of students in, has a whiteboard, can show films, can pretty much run a classroom as you would a regular classroom. Can break students into small groups into small areas, have them come out and present. And the nice thing is that you can archive that entire class as well. So if a student can't make it at that point, they can go back and look. Or if a student would benefit from seeing the class again, that would be helpful as well. I'm going to start with impact on New Hampshire school districts and kind of tie in professional development at the same time. First of all, we train our teachers very well. That's actually expanded as well. But Steve mentioned off your question on the numbers of students a teacher has. A teacher will come in for 3 days of training after an interview process. They leave after the third day with 3 to 5 students, and we'll also have a mentor that will have taught the subject and will work with that teacher. As that teacher becomes comfortable with the 3 to 5, they can expand by 10, still continuing to work with the mentor. And then we have different phases. They can move from an apprentice phase into an instructor phase, at which time there's a more evaluation process that's consistent with what maybe people are used to, but we also have coaches available at that point for specific needs that need to be done. Where the reciprocity starts here now is that we have a lot of schools who have cohorts of our teachers. Most of our teachers are teaching at physical schools. We have teachers at over 50 schools in New Hampshire. We also have teachers from all 6 New England states now as well. But we have teachers we have cohorts of teachers at Salem High School, at Sauhegan High School, at Manchester Memorial High School. And schools are actually looking now to hire some of our teachers if there are openings, simply because it allows for them to develop some professional development teams that can talk about how technology can be used in their classrooms. Because, as Steve mentioned, the whole idea is to make this somewhat seamless. It's not to have an online school over here and a physical school here. Kearsarge High School has a team here today, and what they're moving to is a static schedule. He actually started that this year. So there's no snow days. He has no bus days, is what Jerry Crew, the superintendent, calls them. And the teachers right now just segmented enough of their curriculum in an online environment. So on those days, teachers are available to their students in an online environment, and they're working on some lessons that are relative to the class that is going on. But just, you know, quickly some other things as far as impact on schools. We have a number of schools who start summer school now in April. So instead of the student hanging around for attendance purposes in the school they know they're not going to pass, they can actually give the student the fresh start at that point. You eliminate the attendance problems, behavior problems, and all of those sorts of things. We have policy changes that are going on now. Linwood High School, Lincoln Woodstock, has a policy that's similar to Alabama, Michigan, and New Mexico, which requires all their students to take an online course in order to get a high school diploma. We know that as soon as a student steps into a college environment, they're going to have to operate in some sort of online environment in order to be successful with their courses. We have schools incorporating our thinking and learning strategies as part of their freshman teams. So it enables them to start to it allows students to start to understand how to best organize their work because it deals with multiple subjects and allows teachers at schools to have conversations around those things. We have the Coalition of Essential Schools, actually this is another grant. We have one teacher from Sauhegan who's a trained facilitator, and we're doing a Critical Friends protocol online as part of some research that the coalition is trying to gather in terms of how the Critical Friends protocol translates to an online environment. And then the last thing I will just mention is that we do have a partnership program, and that partnership program now has over 100 schools involved. People come to the training. In part, when they come, they also have access to the competencies and ELOs that Tony spoke about, but it also gives schools access, direct access to our student information system, so any student from their school who signed up with them can see access of their progress, grades, can download unofficial transcripts for files, and all of those things. So all of those things above create really the greatest reason, for our enrollment, going from 700 enrollments to over 7,000 enrollments in a little over 2 years. It's a word of mouth. It's people talking to other people, schools talking to other schools. And then just a couple of things. We do survey. All students who take the course with us need to fill out a survey before the course is completed. And this is an interesting one in terms of any pace and any time. Steve got into that in terms of the reasoning quite a bit. The interesting thing right now is the any place. It's gone from 8% up by about 3% over the last several months. And the reason for that is more schools now are starting to allow for that flexibility. There are still some schools who do require students to do their online work at the school. So any place becomes less of an option for a student. But that's starting to change. I mean, we've been in this now for 2.5 years, and we've seen quantum changes in the thinking of schools. And I just wanted to mention that relative to that slide. And then the teacher demonstrated special interest in my success as a student. You see that's 96% in terms of either strongly agreeing or agreeing. But the monthly phone call to the parent, the student, and then essentially teachers have office hours through Pronto. We're not demonstrating that part today, but a teacher is generally available to students multiple hours over the week. So a student can just contact them directly. Our requirement is that a student is going to be contacted by a teacher who emails them within a 24-hour period. Then in terms of recommendations, again, we're up to the 96% range, and this is again reflective to the word of mouth aspect. Those are some of the things within the survey. I'm going to let Steve actually take over from this point and close out the presentation. Any questions to this point?
One of the things we've been very fortunate in a short time we've been in operation to receive a couple of awards, and one is from the state level, Eddie's Award it's called. And then this last fall, we received a Friend of the Gifted Award as well. One of the things I wanted to get back to, though, is your question about how do you keep kids engaged. And many virtual schools, online schools, find that their retention rate is about 50%. And as Gary said, ours is 80% or just under 80%, which is our goal. And it's quite high. And I'm not talking about a dropout rate. I'm talking about kids who go through a grace period, which is the first 28 days, decide to stay, and then stay to finish the course. And I think it's kind of a three-legged stool approach. It's parents, it's a local school, and it's the student, the motivation of the student. If any one of those fall down, the other one kind of has to pick the pieces up. So we have kids who may not have the most motivation. They appreciate a second chance, but they may not have the most motivation. Maybe the parents aren't involved, but the school is providing a lot of support along with our instructors, our guidance staff. Things still work. We have special education students, but they still need whatever supports they would get traditionally back in the classroom. For example, if they need a one-on-one aid, because you put them online doesn't mean the need for the one-on-one aid goes away. So it's that support that's key. I think from our end, it's about the communication and the relationships. And if our instructors are successful at building those relationships and communicating on an ongoing basis, we see great success. When that doesn't happen, then the kid kind of views this as an online electronic workbook. And, the kids who are your valedictorians, top 10% in your class are going to do it. And many of the others are going to do it for a while and start to lose motivation. So I don't think there's any magic here, but I do think it's the relationships that make a difference. When we talk about our instructors, as Gary mentioned, we're all over New England at this point and looking to expand that. Just to let you know, it costs about $1 million to start up a school like ours before you even get a student through the door. And we also look at kind of our long-term viability. And we really believe that it would make sense for New England to look at one school rather than a number of little schools that would all be doing the same thing. So we're hoping that either your school districts or DOEs say, yeah, let's all work together on this. And that's why I mentioned that, because we're very open to working with anyone. But we would like to keep it within a New England region. We do think being able to see people once in a while makes a lot of difference, because there are commercial schools out there that will build you a school and administrate it from 2,000 miles away. And even though that can be done effectively online, there's still something to having human contact once in a while, knowing that you can talk to people. We've already talked about most of these things here as far as who our instructors are. Some are retired, some are stay-at-home parents, but most are full-time instructors with us. We've talked about curriculum alignment with what Tony already talked to you about. Collaboration, we're not going to demo this today, but this is just a screenshot of our, it's not Skype, it's called Pronto. It's kind of a closed system, but allows us to have full video. You can see up here, you can have audio, video, screen sharing, or whiteboard, which is real nice because if a student says, I'm having trouble with my writing, we can just enable screen sharing and we can see the student's writing, or the instructor can have a whiteboard up and be working on, say, an equation in mathematics or something. It really works quite nicely. What we do find is a lot of our kids are shy. Very few opt to use the video piece. We do ask our instructors to use it once in a while so that they do see that the person is real. Question?
These are mechanic kinds of questions. Do courses have certain sets of things that you want to include? Like you said, kids are kind of shy, but do you have a set of criteria protocols that you want all your classes to have in an area? On how the course operates, because some courses can be very one-dimensional and other courses are very interactive. And
right.
So
our courses, at this point, we purchased all of our course material, almost like buying textbooks. We bought them all from one vendor. It's Florida Virtual School. And the reason we did that, they've been around for 15 years. Many of the versions of our courses are 6, 7, and 8. If we were to build our own, it would take a lot of funding, plus we aren't going to get the 6 or 7 revisions for many, many years. And what's neat about their courses is they're theme and problem-based. So, for example, the biology course, the student is introduced that you're going to be working on a farm and, learn biology through some of that. So they're very interesting from that point of view. And they ask kids to go out and do things. It's not all about just reading something off of a screen. So that's how we've kind of made sure everything's similar and kids get used to seeing a similar presentation to them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Other questions?
They're both 5 minutes.
Okay. And as we've talked about collaboration within our courses, we have forums and discussion areas. And what we also have something that most forums don't have is it's fully audio capable. You'll see the little speaker here and so forth. So what this means is that not only can you have a text forum, but at any point the student can just click on a little button. All they have to do is, and this is enabled, click this little button here and just start talking. And then when they're done, they hit stop. And at the same instant, the instructor can, when they pull up this discussion, hit play and listen to what the student said. And then if they want to, hit record and make an audio comment on the student's comment. But it works in a nested format like any discussion. We found this very powerful for world languages because there are a lot of, people ask, well, how do you handle world languages? Because it's a lot of speaking, or sometimes it's dialogue. And it can work, but it's not a good experience. It is a problem.
Yeah,
I wish I had the answer.
Huge issue. Sorry.
I'd like to thank you. I'm sorry.
One last question. When you talked about any place, it looks like most of it's being done outside of school walls, but some saying it has to be done in school. Obviously, probably because of monitoring, I don't know.
Right. Not has to be, but they'll provide an option.
Right.
Yep.
What do you see as the difference when they provide monitoring at a school, say in a school, compared to students going outside of a school, where who's monitoring, who's doing work?
Either case, we're monitoring.
Well, you're monitoring, right.
We don't ask the local schools to do any monitoring. Academic integrity. That's why we have oral assessments. We use Turnitin.com. We use a lot of things to monitor integrity. But we don't really have data on the difference between a kid who's in a lab situation that's monitored versus someone who does it alone at home at this point. So, yeah, Mr. Turner, we midterms and finals, we have, by the way, we have proctors who do that. The student would say, I nominate my librarian at my school to be a proctor. We send them passwords to get in. Was there a question?
Yeah, I did have a question. You've been up in Marine for 4 or 5 years now?
2.5.
2.5. Okay. Yes. Yeah, you went going from 700 to 7,700 or something like that in your enrollment. How has that impacted?
but I can tell you zero. There has never been a place where they've said, you know, we've lost enrollment in a class, we're no longer offering. We've never heard that, because usually it's a small percentage of kids who do it. I've also said to people who have had concerns that if you ever have a class where 20 kids get up and leave and say, I'm going virtual, you have a different problem. It's not anything new with us.
That's a big deal.
But I've only seen it. Again, that's why we have over 100 partner schools. We work with them. It's never been about competition. It's been how can we meet a diverse set of learning needs for kids. And I think in other ways, because what's happening in this economic catastrophe that we're in the middle of, is there are schools now that are being forced to drop programs. And the good news is they can come back and use us, not because we've eliminated them or caused any elimination, it's because I can't hire an additional math teacher. What do? I have four kids in my calculus. Well, I could. So we haven't heard one story yet of anyone losing a home. And again, our full-time kids are very small.
I encourage anybody to go to the website to contact Steve, Gary, or Tony if
you
have any
all.
Questions. And thank you very much for a great presentation.
Thank you.